the discipline of the intelligent beings, not to say people, hopefully they are people, that they need to put such a ship together without strikes, without argument, building such an, and without obviously a monetary system, because nobody could afford to build it money-wise. So they have to have a system far advanced above ours, socially, scientifically, and so forth.
I think one of the more dramatic photographs you have is the one of the lunar orbiters evidently caught this gigantic craft in flight over the surface of the moon. It was above it. Evidently, the lunar orbiter was going in one direction, the huge spacecraft was going in another direction. That's one of those 20 or 25 mile long spacecraft, right?
Possibly. But it wasn't a lunar orbiter, it was an Apollo flight.
It was an Apollo flight. Of course, the astronauts looking down and seeing this huge spaceship going down underneath them that looks like a very, very large version of a Goodyear blimp. It stretches from, what, from San Pedro to the Santa Monica Mountains. That's how big it was.
Well, I'm sure they were excited.
And you were kind enough to bring along a whole stack of those photographs, I think, today.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And what I would like to offer the audience out there, if they'll send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, we'll be more than happy to send that picture back to them. And then there is information on how you can get the book, which we'll go ahead and cover anyway.
Yeah.
And give you some of the information there. But it's just something I want you to see. A NASA photograph of a spacecraft that is about 25 miles long.
You see, what I did here, I made sure that I said in my book that my conclusions of the identification of these photographs does not necessarily mean that NASA identifies them the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm a free researcher. I got the material from them. I ordered from them the pictures that had these strange objects on it, and I reproduced them in my book.
I wonder what they would call that. You know, there it is. It's casting a shadow on the moon below. They may have an interesting name for it.
Well, yes, they may. They may. A friend of mine that lives in Las Vegas, he has just recently sent me a letter, and he says he has, close to the crater border, at the Sunset Terminator, observed an immense object, that looks like two large oval objects put together, and that casts an immense shadow. He said after ordering pictures from NASA of the same area, that they have been retouched.
Oh, yes. NASA has learned how to retouch their photographs, haven't they?
And now after my book comes out, I'm sure they will be busy to do that. And I really didn't mean that. I wanted them to use the money and the research to reveal more to the people and not to retouch these photographs.
Well, your book is doing that. Where can we get your book? Somebody wanted to get it.
Well, at the present time, the book just came out, and it is not available in bookstores yet, but it will be in time. But at the present time, it can be ordered from the publisher, which is GAF International, P.O. Box 1722-1722, Vista, V-I-S-T-A, California, 92083. Am I permitted to say the price?
Certainly, go ahead.
Okay, the price is $9.95 plus $1 for postage and handling. So you can have your copy by ordering it directly from the publisher at the very moment.
And then we'll send them a photograph of that huge spacecraft. If they'll just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope here to KABC, 3321 South Los Angeles Boulevard in Los Angeles.
Correct.
I know that there are a lot of people that are kind of dying to talk to you here tonight, Fred, about some of the things that you've talked about and some of the ideas that you had and your research, where it's led you. Let me give the numbers and invite everyone to get your questions ready and come in. Here's how you participate. If you're calling from Los Angeles, dial 520 followed by the word talk. Atmosphere. It has clouds. It has moisture. It has plants and vegetation. It has intelligent life. It has spaceships. It has huge machines that are mining away at the very surface of the moon and evidently carting it away. And our guest tonight, who has done a lot of this research for you and has a great book with him, 125 photographs of this that I think you'll enjoy, even more than George Leonard's books, really. They're called Alien Bases on the Moon. Fred Steckling is with us, and we're ready to go to the callers, Fred, and put you on the hot seat.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. KBC, I think Mary is on the line. Mary, how are you?
Yes, I'm Mary. All right, Bill, this is for you.
Okay.
And I'm very upset.
Okay.
Okay, you're in the news, right?
Yes.
I mean, you do get the news. If the photograph is available to him through NASA,
mm-hmm.
it would also be available to you, right?
That's true.
Okay. Then why has that not been offered to any of the nightly news TV stations so that we could see it on the news?
You know, Mary, I have talked to television news people about doing this. They find it much more interesting to talk about the Ayatollah Khomeini. Quite often they just don't believe it. And the old syndrome, if it's so, the government would have told us, and they don't want to really get into it. There have been television offerings of this kind before in the past, and there certainly will be some in the future. And in the planning stages right now is a television version of this program, in which
because,
we certainly will get into it.
Because it would seem to me that if even one photograph was shown, and this is authentic, then Ted Koppel would pick it up and have a Nightline special program.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's sort of upsetting to me. You see, I want to believe all this.
Well, if Ted says it, then it's true, but otherwise
no,
it's not.
No, I'm not saying that. But if someone only wants to claim that it's available only through a book or something
no,
like
you
that.
No, you can get the photographs, hon.
I'm saying that if there's a big accident on the Long Beach Freeway, the news is right out there to pick it up and show it on the nightly news.
Mm-hmm.
If there's this type of thing available to everybody, then I really think it's only fair to those of us that are listening that be put on TV and let us see one of the photographs.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why they don't. I've talked to the people in television about it. Tried to elicit their interest. It's kind of interesting to them. Why they don't want to go ahead and show the pictures like we do it here on radio, we tell you about them. That's all I
can
do.
But that's not the same.
I know it's not the same.
Because, you see, in our mind, we could say, well, that may be only a shadow you're seeing from a cloud.
Well, I know what you're saying.
Okay. I had to throw that out because that's the way I feel.
Well, that's perfectly okay.
Uh-huh.
And maybe one of these days they'll grab a hold and catch up with radio over in television and expose some of these things.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Let's see. I think we have Bob on the line. Bob?
Yeah, hi.
Uh-huh.
Bill?
Yes.
Fred?
Yes?
Fred, I just have one question. At the early part of the program here, you mentioned that the evidence has been available for hundreds of years. And yet we did not have photography nor telescopes at that time. How do you explain that?
Well, the Royal Astronomical Society in England has recorded these sightings of unexplained happenings on the moon. In recent days, there have been photographs published. For instance, when Mount Wilson Observatory, about 40 years ago, photographed this amazing tube system in the Gassendi crater, it was published right here in Los Angeles. And they used a 100-inch telescope, and it shows connecting tubes that go for hundreds of miles and crossing through the mountains into tunnels. That was all available to the public.
Well, yeah, but I understood you to say that, in other words, if I understood you correctly, you're saying that in recorded history...
Well, correct. They did not have photography then, that's true. But we have photographed what has been reported. Then, later on, through our... observations through our spacecraft, such as Surveyor and the Orbiters and the Apollo flights.
Mm-hmm.
And the photographs that I have in my book, they're all numbered. For instance, strange white glowing objects hovering over the astronauts, Apollo 12, NASA number AS1249-7319. So 90% of all my photographs are numbered so that people can see that these pictures are real and that I got them from NASA and that they can order their photographs. After they see the numbers in my book, they can certainly write to NASA, and if they are willing to pay for these photographs, they can buy them and can do the same research that I have done and can find out what I have on these photographs.
From time to time, we find the photographs are a little different these days than the earlier photographs.
Well, okay, I'm not trying to shoot Fred down.
Perfectly all right. We're here to be shot at.
Well, right, okay. That's perfectly normal that you ask these questions. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much on that.
You bet.
You know, it should be the grandest opening in Los Angeles housing history. On the moon. Aliens doing something up on the moon. And let's go again to our callers. I think we have Dale on the line. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you aboard. What's up?
I have Fred's book.
Do you?
It's fabulous.
Good.
The drawings, the pictures are really what he is trying to put out on the radio. It's too bad television doesn't do something with this because... I think the people would be more aware of what's going on. I do have a question for Fred. Pertaining the picture on page 75, it's plate 54. of the lakes or reservoirs or whatever they appear to be, do you feel that they are just exactly that, ponds that are for storage of water, or and what's keeping them from freezing?
Well, after flying over Southern California on many occasions, I've noticed irrigation ponds which are, have very much the same shape with reinforced walls as what I have on this area blow up here of this lunar orbital photograph. It looks to me as though they are very much identical. And the second question, why doesn't freeze the water? Why doesn't it freeze water there where it is so cold? This is an area close to the crater Plato, or Plato, which is located in a more moderate temperate zone. On the moon, conditions are quite different. We have a more temperate zone in the northern sections, around the North Pole areas and the South Pole areas, because there the sunlight strikes from an angle, and it shows on photographs that I have collected that any cloud buildups or mist or fog or anything of this kind, which I have also in my book, is in areas close to the poles. And I feel that it is not that cold there for the water to freeze.
How about the volcanic activity? Could this also be keeping it from freezing in this area?
That is very much possible, because we have volcanic active areas found in the Antarctica already in the 1930s, where immense lakes in the South Pole area are really ice-free, grown with algae where people can swim in it due to volcanic activity. So why shouldn't this happen on the moon? That is entirely possible.
Yeah, I've gotten through Chapter 10, and like I say, it's fascinating. The color photographs that definitely show vegetation, it can't be anything else but vegetation, are fantastic. And I just wish NASA would release some more. Of course, probably now they will definitely start doing a retouch.
Well, perhaps not. Maybe I helped them in some way to identify these photographs and doing my private research. We know that NASA is short of funds, and that they would like to do more research. We have data right now at the Houston Space Labs, which would take us hundreds of years to identify, because we don't have the people. But coming back to these color photographs, let me tell you here what is an amazing thing, what the Apollo 11 astronauts, the statements they made. They said, we found the moon not barren or desolate, but we found the moon dynamic and beautiful. Okay, barren and desolate means death, not active. But dynamic and beautiful means there's obviously something going on. As a matter of fact, these statements were made in the book Footprints on the Moon. That was released through a New York publisher. I think it was Life Books.
You're right. I have that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned, in fact, if I remember right, it was released sometime after the Apollo 11 astronauts landed, that they didn't say too much direct, but they did mention that they were being observed at that time when they first sat down, that they saw objects just off to the distance where they knew they were there, but they couldn't really make them out. They believed they were of UFO type, and I don't know if you have any more in your book on that. But
If you're aware of the French scientist, Mr. Maurice Chatelain, he also wrote a book some years ago, Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space, titled, and it was an amazing book. After I studied this carefully, I found that Mr. Chatelain was under NASA contract from France to help to build communication equipment on the Apollo spacecraft. Then after he retired and went back to Paris, he wrote this book, and he revealed this, that nearly all Apollo flights were followed by UFOs. Some of them were trailed to the moon and around lunar orbit for three or four times. And that he states that the astronauts have seen these things, and he is a NASA scientist, an ex-scientist, so we can make sure that whatever statements he makes are correct. Now, Dr. James Harder of the Columbia University, he said he discovered from Apollo communication tapes that Apollo 11 and 12 had encounters with UFOs. Apollo 12 was trailed 3 times around the moon. Harder believed that these incidents were hushed up because of public panic.
Yeah, I just have one more statement, and I will thank you and turn over the lines to whoever else. I also have contacts from various sources, in fact, the same source that I received the book from. And we believe that the Apollo 13, which was the ill-fated one that had the oxygen tank explode,
mm-hmm.
Was also followed. And if they had really been in any danger, I think we would have had a true close encounter at that point in time, because they would not have let anything happen. At least we can hope.
We can hope that.
Well, we can say that they are on the moon. They let us go there. They let us take photographs, 99% of the lunar surface. They let us land. And they let us return safely. They must be friendly. And if they're human beings and they have any feelings whatsoever and they find a fellow astronaut in distress, I'm sure they would have rescued them. But what we have been told about it, that is another question.
That's the whole question.
Well, that's what this is all about, Dale, is to get the government to fess up, because I don't think people are going to panic and run amok in the streets, as some of the great brains of our military seem to believe.
But, you know, there are other angles to look at. For instance, the economical angle, the social angle, even the religious angle. I talked to a gentleman recently that came to visit me from Saudi Arabia, and a quite a high official. And he said to me, you know, when the Apollo landed on the moon, it caused quite a havoc with the Quran, which is the religious Bible of Muhammad. Because in there, it states that the moon is not real, it's nothing but a reflection. So when Apollo landed on the moon, the officials in Arabia had quite a problem to explain to their followers that the moon indeed is real, that the rocks they had here, which were loaned to them by NASA, came from the moon. Now, that is quite a shock to a religious belief. On top of that, one can speculate and investigate further and say, well, if the Quran is not correct and the moon is real but not a reflection, then how many other mistakes does it have in there? Or, at that matter, in our religions or in other religions of the world, because we are taught, like Earth, and our Christian religion says this, Earth, down here is hell, and up there is heaven. Yet, when you're out in space, there's no up and down. Where is hell and where is heaven? All the planets and all the suns and all the bodies in space are created by some force unknown to man. Some call it higher intelligence, whatever we want to call it. But nevertheless, our religions are quite shaken up with this information, too, I'm sure.
Yes, they are.
But we do need to deal with reality.
Right.
So that we can cope with it. And if some of the ancient writers made some mistakes, they made some mistakes, but it's time to correct them.
Correct. Correct.
All right, Dale, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll go on to Milton now. Milton, you're on.
Yes, this is Milton. I have 2 questions. The first one is, Fred, have you tried to enlarge any of these photos before you put them in your book? And is the quality good enough to enlarge?
Yes, I have. I have done sometimes 10 or 14 enlargements of or area blow-ups.
Yes.
And, of course, as more one enlarges, this were done through laboratories in San Diego. And as more one enlarges, of course, as fuzzy the picture becomes. But, nevertheless, I feel, and people that have seen my book, that most of the photographs are quite clearly still show what I want to bring out.
Well, then, you printed enlargements in your book, some of them. They aren't the size that the NASA is selling. They're larger or blown up.
That's correct.
All right.
Not all of them, but some of them.
Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2 question. You mentioned sighting in a crater, I believe, 3 objects.
In Archimedes, yes.
And the next hour, in 24 hours, these objects had disappeared.
The following night, yes.
Right. Now, my question is, if yourself, having seen something that isn't supposed to be there, and you're sighting it, did you try and get someone else with a similar telescope so they could verify your sighting, or did you contact the government or anyone so that you would have a backup proving you really were seeing what you were seeing?
I contacted other amateur astronomers, and they did not see or observe the moon during that night because of unfavorable conditions. I happened to be at an elevation of 7,100 feet, and it was an excellent clear night.
Yes.
And I could use the best magnification during that night.
Well, would you make arrangements or suggestions to other astronomers that might be listening to this show tonight if they were to observe something in the area you were looking or other areas and see something similar? Do you have any suggestions of how they might either verify it or phone somebody with the capability to photograph it to prove what's really up there? Any suggestions?
Yes, okay. First of all, 99% of all lunar observation these days are done by amateurs. The largest telescopes, such as the Mount Palomar telescope, the Hale reflector, and others, are aimed at deep space. And so most of the photographs then would be produced by amateur astronomers.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. And our first hour has flipped by at a fast hurry, but we couldn't exactly equate the romance going on up there. A lot of mining activity, some incredibly large spacecraft. We have photographs of them. Fred has many of those photographs in his book. On the front of his book is a spacecraft that is about 25 miles.
Probably
about 25 miles long, if you can imagine something that big. And it's a NASA photograph taken of it. You can get your copy of that photograph, by the way, just by sending me a self-addressed stamped envelope as long as our supplies last. And that'll also tell you how to get a hold of Fred's book. But Fred, how do you get it anyway, in case someone doesn't...
Okay, the book is not available at the very moment for bookstores, but it will be soon. It can be ordered at the very moment through the publisher, and that is GAF, GAF, GAF International, P.O. Box 1722, 1722, Vista, V-I-S-T-A, California 92083. And it sells for $9.95 plus a dollar postage and handling.
Okay, now that's the book. We'll give you the how to get that book again before this hour is over. And if you miss that, you can call us here at the station and talk to Lita in broadcast information. She'll have all of that information for you. And by all means, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. We'll send you the information on the book and that incredible photograph.
Hey, you know, Bill, I wanted to mention something. I almost forgot. I spoke to a couple of photographic experts, and they told me, just like I had discovered, when the astronauts were doing the historic jump on the moon,
mm-hmm.
that jump that was supposed to carry them 3 feet up because of the lack of gravity, well, Smith only made it 18 inches. And it has baffled a lot of the experts why in the world he couldn't jump any higher.
Well, he's a pretty well-built man, even though he is a senator right now.
That's correct. So obviously there must be a higher gravity there than we have been told.
Well, as we get into the second hour, in case you missed us in the first hour, we have found out some things about the moon that most people don't understand or don't know. That there is some atmosphere up there. That there is moisture up there. That there is vegetation up there. Vegetation even changes color during the times of the years. There are clouds up there. Fog banks up there. Buildings. Machines. One machine, you have a picture of it, that seems to be just scraping away at the side of the crater and then throwing up a plume of material that stretches back for miles.
That's correct.
Beyond it.
Yes.
And then, of course, these huge, huge spacecrafts of different sizes and descriptions. We have other photographs that are not in your book that we have seen of a dish antenna that's about a mile and an eighth across that is not pointed at Earth. Doing something else.
Pointed to another one of the planets in our system.
Another one of the planets, perhaps.
Yes.
So, well, let's get to our callers and see what's on your mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and you're talking to Fred Steckling tonight. Is this Milton? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, who are we talking to here?
This is Mike.
Oh, hello, Mike. Move down one notch on my computer.
Okay,
what's on your mind, Mike?
My question is directed to Fred,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to know whether if, let's say, aliens are mining the moon, would they also be mining other planets? In our solar system, and also could it be that they have mined Earth back when it wasn't very populated?
Well, anything is possible. We have heard from ancient astronauts. There has been research has been done intensively by many authors, like von Daniken, for instance, that we had visitors on Earth long ago. And Mr. Chatelain, in his book, stated that our ancestors came from outer space. So that again proves that we had visitors from outer space. Whether they're mining other planets or not, of course, that's hard to say. from studying several hundreds of photographs so far of the planet Mars, I come to the conclusion, yes, that the Mars also shows a definite patterns of new craters which seem to be like strip mined or cut in terraces. Also on the planet Mercury, these things can be seen in some amazing looking devices that look like a starfish or a cross.
We call them an X-drone, or that's what George Leonard would call them.
Right, that's correct.
But they're on Mercury and Moon. We've got photographs of them both, and it looks like that's some kind of a mining device.
You know, the amazing thing is that during the late 60s, when we had a congressional investigation of UFOs, the 90th Congress had invited the scientists behind closed doors, and they're asking the question, is it possible that UFOs could be coming from our own solar system? And the answer was, they definitely could. There is absolutely no evidence that an advanced civilization cannot build bases on any of the planets in our system. Today, we are advanced on Earth to go to the bottom of the seas, to go to other planets. We speak about colonies in space. We have the technology, perhaps not the money at the very moment, but we know how. So why shouldn't have other intelligent beings have solved this problem long ago and have built all these things already?
Would it be possible that they could be mining under the oceans at this very moment, down so deep that we would never even be able to spot them down there or detect them?
I have talked to some Navy people last year, and they told me confidentially that in certain areas in the Caribbean and other parts, they have picked up immense objects on the bottom of the sea, moving around very, very slowly and far too deep for being submarines. So it is very much possible that they are investigating. Whether they are mining our oceans or not, I don't know, but I'm sure they're here investigating what we are doing.
If they were mining our oceans or even our planets, could their mining operations, after so long, become a hazard to us in a way that perhaps they mined the moon to it was a point that it was going to explode or cause problems with gravity and the ocean and so forth here?
Well, it is all possible, but what we are doing to our planet Earth right now, pollution, atomic threats, we have enough bombs to blow each other off here for 10 or 15 times. Well, maybe we beat them to it. I don't know. It is hard to say. These are all speculations. I would say this, that if a civilization is this far advanced, that they obviously would respect the laws of nature, and that means you don't take everything from nature, you replace something as well. We do this now when we cut trees, and we replant the forests again, because we know we cannot always take, we have to return something as well, and I'm sure these people, or beings, probably do the same thing, and they would never mine the moon to the extent where it becomes dangerous and would explode and then cause any havoc to us.
Okay, does that help you out?
Yes, sir, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind tonight. We're in hour two. We're talking about alien bases on the moon. Just what they're doing, can't say. Looks like they're doing a lot of mining that's going on up there. And we'll be back in just a moment to talk to you more about it. Awesome. That was short for George.
No.
Okay.
I'm a member of the L5 Society.
Yes.
And I overheard the comments that Fred made about the lunar atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to quote a couple sentences from a book entitled New Earth, by James Oberg. He's a columnist in Omni magazine.
Right. Gio, could we get you to speak up just a little bit?
Okay.
Right.
He's talking about the possibilities of building an atmosphere on the moon. And he says, quote, although the moon at present has no atmosphere to speak of, there are ions, atoms stripped of their electrons, flying around near the moon, which could be considered a mini atmosphere. The total mass of this cloud does not exceed more than 10 tons. Now, based on these comments and another fact that I have seen, doesn't seem that the moon is capable of supporting an atmosphere of about 2.5 pounds, like your guest said it would. And I also don't see any reason why the moon should have an atmosphere at all in order to hold back its volcanic internal pressures, because it's very capable of doing that just with its gravity itself. So what
would
does your guest have to say about that?
Right. Well, I've read Mr. Oberg's articles, and I'm very familiar with his type of work.
Mm-hmm.
I have many other articles which prove him wrong. And that is reports from NASA that the moon has a thin atmosphere, and that, for instance, when the Apollo craft landed, the solar wind indicator was meant with air, with wind, because it was billowed up during the Apollo mission. For instance, Apollo 14. The flag waved back and forth, and when the astronauts became aware of this, one of them jumped in front of the camera lens so it wouldn't be too noticeable on Earth.
Oh.
That's correct. Also, I have photographs here, and these are the NASA photographs that show clouds on the moon. If there's no atmosphere, then if there's a vacuum on the moon, or nearly no atmosphere whatsoever, it would be impossible to support these clouds that I have on my photographs.
Well, that's not necessarily so. There is a possibility in certain lunar craters where the mountains are so high that the sun hardly has an opportunity to shine, that there are frozen gases. And NASA, for many years, has been trying to get Congress to support the Lunar Polar Orbiter mission, a satellite that would detect such frozen gases on the moon, which could be used for lunar colonies instead of having to bring these gases from Earth. And
would it be very likely that frozen gases would be moving?
Yes, if the sun, for some reason, let's say a piece of rock falls from the mountain and a little ray of sunlight falls on the gas, it would heat up the gas instantaneously and vaporize it, causing a cloud to go up and to escape, sort of like a puff-like effect. But the fact that NASA has been trying to get Congress to back up such a mission to discover such gases shows that they don't seem to be trying to hide anything.
That's what I said already earlier. They gave me all the pictures, of course. You're right. I know of this mission, and I hope that they will get the money together to do it. We know that not everything is told to the public. The government has obviously some reasons to keep things quiet. We must look at it from this angle. The military has been in charge of this investigation. The astronauts were all high commission officers. And
are you saying that they have lied or that they have failed to?
No. If I never say they have lied. I say that they have kept quiet in the interest of a national, perhaps national security, as they were made to believe. This is what Dr. Harder said. And that if things were found on the moon which definitely shouldn't be there, if it is exactly the way as we've been told in our astronomy books.
Well, I know one thing for sure. There are a few other facts that I could bring up. If the moon had such a dense atmosphere as you say it does, not as dense as Earth, but dense enough, we would have been able to find out about that atmosphere and what it has through primitive spectral analysis, which was available 100 years ago. That is how we found out that there was helium in the sun before we even discovered it on Earth. Such an atmosphere would extend for hundreds of miles. The fringes of it would.
All right.
Being very improbable that there would be such a heavy, dense atmosphere. As for the lunar landing module, it would burn up in such an atmosphere. It wasn't even designed to hold up the weight of the astronauts themselves on this Earth. It had to be specially fitted into the rocket so that when it landed on the moon with its much lesser gravity, it could hold that weight up, but not on the Earth.
True, very true. Nevertheless, on a small body like the moon, the atmosphere, as thin as it is, collects in the lower areas, in the valleys, and on the bottom of craters. That's where we mostly find it. In the highlands, there's very little, just like there's very little at 50 and 60,000 feet above the Earth.
Well, if the moon were to have a gravity, let's say, you say it's a little higher, let's say it were one-third that of Earth, such a gravity would extend three times higher than that of the Earth, and our gravity extends, our atmosphere rather, extends for hundreds of miles, detectable atmosphere, very thin, but it detects that far. On the moon, it would extend even further, even though the bulk of it would be in the lowest areas, but we would still see evidence of that, and we would have found that out 100 years ago before NASA even came into existence.
The astronomers have observed all these things. Many astronomers have observed the clouds in Plato, and Tycho, moving around, and evidence of atmosphere, meteor flashes on the moon, so there has to be an atmosphere. Perhaps it is, and I'm sure it's not of the same composition as Earth's. And there is very, very little water vapor in the lunar atmosphere. It is extremely clean, very clean. It's not as easy visible as our atmosphere, which holds a lot of water vapor.
Well, what is it made out of? If I'm sure that a simple spectral analysis could figure out what it could be made out of.
All right.
Earth-based telescope.
I have done research into a NASA publication, and their analysis I don't go along with because I feel that they're not telling us entirely the truth. And that, again, has a reason, obviously, because if the military has run the Apollo program, and it has been an entire military engineering program, not so much a scientific one, obviously, then they have reasons to keep things like this quiet because they can build bases on the moon, set up stations there, use the air that exists, perhaps pump it into stations, into domes, and that way they don't have to bring the air from the Earth and so forth. And so they keep this quiet. And another gentleman who wrote a book called Somebody Else is on the Moon, he stated that. He said that this has been an entire military engineering program, and there was a lot of information covered up. We have been given some information, I think, enough to stimulate the public so that they will investigate.
But do you think that these facts would that you're presenting would truly hold up once space transportation becomes available to the public at large?
Then, of course, it will be all revealed. But when will this happen? I hope soon, but correct, that would reveal to us really what happens out in space.
Well, that's the question, and I really doubt very much that many of these things that you've mentioned are on the moon itself.
Well, I have the pictures of it, and they're from NASA. So
yeah, we have to look at those photographs, Gio, very closely. Again, there's that machine throwing up a plume of dirt, and it goes back miles from the lip of the crater. And that wouldn't happen in a non-atmosphere situation.
Let's face it, if all the oceans of the Earth would suddenly disappear, the atmosphere would fill the ocean floors and seek the lowest areas on Earth. That means what is now sea level in the higher mountains would be almost airless. And if you would be on the moon trying to find an atmosphere on the Earth under those conditions, you would have a hard time, believe me.
But then wouldn't the astronauts have been treated to a beautiful blue sky and sunset? With such an atmosphere of 2.5 pounds, you should at least see some evidence of a blue sky on the moon.
Not necessarily. No, it all depends how much ozone is in the air. If you fly at an altitude of 50,000 feet and you look out of your aircraft window, to your amazement, find the sky totally black above you, it's because of the ozone gases that which are below the aircraft and the ground.
It also depends where they are. Like 14 was on the Faramarro Highlands, and there was probably very little atmosphere up there.
That's correct. There are different areas on the moon where the atmosphere is extremely thin, and there are other areas in the valleys and craters where it is obviously denser. That's why the photographs show all these things.
Okay, Gio?
All right.
All right. Thank you very much for your penetrating questions. Appreciate those.
Thank you.
We're 26 minutes now, 27 past 11 o'clock. Let's go to our next caller. I guess we have, Greg on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi. You know, the last caller covered a lot of what I wanted to bring up.
All right.
Let me try to go on from there, though. It's very difficult to try to discuss the photographs, seeing as I don't have them here, and I don't believe any of the three of us, even Mr. Steckling is an expert at photographic analysis. You're not, are you, sir?
Well, let's say this. That I have studied photography. I'm a pilot. I know how to identify aerial photography. I had the photographs analyzed by a couple of experts that have been...
What kind of experts are you talking about?
Ex-military experts that were engaged in photographic analysis in Vietnam and a British military expert. And they all told me that I sure have something there, something very, very unusual.
Did they agree on your identification of what you thought you saw?
Well, that is another thing. Like I said already in my book earlier, that what I have analyzed here does not necessarily mean that NASA has the same analysis.
Well, I'm not talking about NASA, but you said you consulted some independent experts.
Oh, they know, yes, definitely.
They agree with you on your identification?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, I talked to a retired Air Force colonel, and he said to me, "My God, look at all these clouds down there." And he said, "Where did you get these photos from?" And I said, "From NASA, of course." And I said, "May I add, they're not classified. I got them by ordering them from in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, they're fantastic." And he is a pilot. He must have about 30 or 40,000 hours flight time, perhaps.
Okay. Well, rather than trying to talk about that again, like I say, over the radio, we can't really do it too well. Let's go back, though, to some of the other things you brought up. seems that the question of the existence of some sort of extraterrestrial mining civilization working on the moon is separate from the other things, existence of atmosphere, and particularly existence of some sort of native life forms. You haven't really said what kind of evidence you have for, other than you try to bring out the example of bacteria being brought back. I think that's very inconclusive. Anything beyond that, though, that would point to the existence of life forms on the moon?
Well, the lunar soil that was returned, as you know from the experiment, has yielded immense yields on our the plants that were planted in it. Also, this investigation of life on the moon was a byproduct. Really, I came into this investigation later, after I noticed all these objects that weren't supposed to be there and that moved around from one place to another. And then I said, well, look at this. There are clouds hanging there, and some of them measuring 20, 30 miles in length, and they look like heavy cumulus clouds. And I said, well, how could they be there in a vacuum? Impossible. And then one led to another, speaking to different experts, and one doctor, which is retired, that used to be a physician for the astronauts, that came to see me in my house a couple of years ago. And all he had to agree that there are a lot of things that we haven't been told. So,
are you actually claiming that there is some life on the moon, native to the moon?
I don't know that.
Don't know whether it's native to the moon,
that's
but it certainly is working.
But it's actually living there independent of some, say, self-contained structure that's been brought in from elsewhere.
I don't know that.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to make such a statement. I have some photographs that were taken by Apollo 8 of the lunar backside, and they describe the area looking like the southwest desert areas of the United States. And these are color photos, and they show craters that show some form of green color in the shady areas, and the rest of the photograph is brown. And that is under direct sunlight, and it looks very much like patches of vegetation.
Well, we're not going to resolve that. Let me go on to something else. You've relied rather heavily on the idea that because of the military involvement, they would be holding back things. Now, I could believe if they found something rather incredible like an extraterrestrial civilization, they might well hold something like that back. But I have not seen reticence on the part of investigators involved with, say, Mars to hold back the fact that there is a thin Martian atmosphere, that there are ice caps, etc., you know, small amounts of water here and there.
Geysers, in fact.
Right. And why would they make a distinction between Mars and the moon? I would think that in the scientific community who would be very interested in bringing this out.
Well, obviously, you know, people just don't want to rock the boat or make waves. We have astronomy books. We have books that have been in the schools and the colleges. Some of them are 30 and 40 years old and overdue to be changed. What happens here is, about Mars, we had our ideas, what Mars should be like. We had these ideas of life, of possible life on Mars and clouds on the Mars, because we've seen them through the telescopes. The moon has always been considered as a dead place, and that's the most significant thing, that if we can see through telescopes things on the moon which are not supposed to be there, what's going on the other planets? You see, on Mars, for instance, when Dr. Jastrow made a statement not long ago, he said the American public is not aware of the fact that we really found more on Mars than they have been told, and that they have paid for it and they haven't been told and given this information. And Jastrow stated definitely that we found life on Mars. And there's another thing. Let me mention this for a second. We've been told that the Martian atmosphere is 0.1% of Earth's atmosphere.
Right.
And yet at the same time, they photographed heavy evaporation clouds at an altitude of 14 and 15,000 feet.
Well, I think that could be possible.
How? In an atmosphere?
Well, given that they do have, the planet does have rather substantial ice caps, I can't go through the, you know, physics calculations right at the moment, but I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Well, true, but in an atmosphere of only 7 millibars, that such an atmosphere cannot support clouds at that altitude.
Well, it depends what you're... When you say cloud, that encompasses...
vapor clouds. Water vapor clouds. Heavy formations of clouds around the volcanoes and areas on Mars. On top of it, we've been told that the temperatures are below freezing 70 and 80 degrees. And some scientific article stated this. Spacecraft, was it Viking 2, landed close to the Martian North Pole, and it is summer there now, The temperatures are 78 below zero, and the Martian poles have melted mostly all away. But they never explained the problem.